Welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Jordan Maxwell, and we are talking about many different things. Of course, his work, the life work that Jordan has been involved in, the things that he's seen, and of course, some of the things he's not privy to talk about. Hopefully, you know, he can do that at some point, but ultimately, as we said, that's his choice if he wants to do that. Now, I wanted to return to something you mentioned before. You briefly mentioned 9/11, and is an interesting event overall. There are so many people that are, you know, predicting the next one, the next big terrorist attack, false flag attack, yeah. Call it what yeah. you will. It seems like, well, I wanted to kind of get to the core if this was it, so to speak, if this was the big event and we will not see anything like that in the future. And I'm also drawn back to a document that you had on your website, Jordan, that was very, very interesting. And if you do recall it, if you do have any more, you know, information about it, I'd love to talk about it. It was basically a diagram of the Great Pyramid at Giza, I think, that actually was calculated into dates and everything. And on there was, I think it was 17th of September 2001 as ushering the, like, in the a new era, a new age pretty much. And this was a document back from the 50s, I think. It was a Roman Catholic. Do you know which one I'm referring to?
Yeah, of course. It was a British Israel document. It was dealing with the British Israel World Federation. That was back in the 40s. Back in the 40s, they already calculated that the new kingdom of God would start in September of 2001, and they said mid-September. And then I came across just recently two other publications from 1930s documents that talked about that the kingdom, the British Israel World Federation, was not only them, but two other documents talking about the kingdom that would be established, and they said that it would be established on Jesus' birthday. And his birthday, these two articles, two totally separate different articles, talked about his birthday was September 11th. And so it will be on September 11th, something will happen which will inaugurate the new order and the new dispensation for the earth. And I said, my God, that's incredible. Yep. 9/11, and that's back in 1930s. They talked about that. They said it would be in 2001 and 9/11. And I'm just amazed. Jesus' birthday is 9/11. So
what does it mean? What, when they calculate these things and they talk about ushering in of a new dispensation, a new age, a new era is upon us. This is obviously connected to the millennium, but it's also tying back to the whole calendar systems and everything else. It's how do they view this, do you think, if we get into their philosophy a little bit?
Well, you know, again, this is speculative on my part, just asking for my opinion, but I am totally convinced for myself that what is actually happening here is that there is a higher knowledge, a higher wisdom, or a higher power, shall I say, in the universe that's all around us, and that these are operating, it's operating for thousands of years on this earth. And Christians, they'll talk about the demons and angels and devils and spirits and ghosts and poltergeists, and the Jews also have a tradition talking about that. And of course, the Islamic world talks about the jinns and the spirit entities and demons. So it's not an idea that's foreign to the Western world, that there are a spiritual presence on the earth that's smarter than we are. They're called the gods. And I am of the opinion that there's been a higher intelligence that we don't see necessarily that's been manipulating us and playing us for fools for thousands and thousands of years. Something in the occult world, the unseen world, if you want to call them spirits or angels or demons or jinns, whatever your religion calls them, but I'm totally sure that's what's going on here, is that mankind is being led by higher intelligences that are watching us and basically playing us. They're playing with us. And so they tell us things, and we think that we are a spokesman for God, a spokesman for the Lord, and so we start writing down things, only to discover that we're just dispensing information that's been given to us by a spirit world. And that's why so many of the prophets and seers and the psychics are being able to tell the future.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody may know the future, whoever they are, and they are leading the human race. So that we think that we're being led by God. Well, I would suggest you better go back and look at who's leading you.
Are they behind 9/11, responsible for that?
I think so. I think that there is a whole network of spiritual networks, so to speak, that has been in operation for countless thousands of years, as far back as man goes. You know, there's always been a physical existence. Well, I believe there's always been a spiritual existence, too, that is not of this world. It's not of the physical world, and that whoever is on the other side, so to speak, is manipulating us, leading us, and usually misleading us. And we consider it to be the Lord or God or whatever. And in fact, it's the higher intelligences that are giving us prophecies that are leading us around. I mean, as I said, there's nothing new in Christianity. They talk about the devil and demons. And the Bible even says that all the prophecies of your religions, of all the teachings of demons, well, I think there's something to that.
So you're saying in a subtle way we're nudged and pushed, and specifically then maybe even people in positions of power already, they think they're connected to God or something higher, but in effect they're manipulated by something else.
That's exactly right. They're being played for fools. They're being played and manipulated, thinking that they're doing it for God. They think that that's God doing it. You know, well, I would say, you better go back and study the subject a little more, because, there are two ways of looking at this idea of reincarnation. The phenomena that we call reincarnation is legitimate. There is something to this idea that someone has lived here before. I don't have any problem with that myself, but it's a phenomena. And so there is no doubt that this phenomena exists, because there are way too many cases where people, young children have sat down and talked all about something that happened hundreds of years ago, and give all the details, and then later on we find out they were exactly right. Now, how can a little 7 or 8 year old child tell us something about happened 500 years ago and give us all the details, and then later on we find out everything they said was exactly correct? How is that possible?
Indeed.
And so people would say, well, that's a reincarnation. Because they came back. Well, I'm saying, well, that's possible, and that very well might be. But there is another explanation, and that is that if these spirit entities, the poltergeists, or whoever these spirit entities that the Christians call demons or angels or spirits, if they have been around for tens of thousands of years, or been around as long as mankind's been around, they also are able to see and understand and watch man's history. And they are obviously far, far more wiser and intelligent than we are. And if we can record things with tape recorders and video recorders, maybe they have a higher technology, and they are able to record everything that mankind is doing.
Mm-hmm.
and then they can talk through and you know, talk to someone and tell us something that happened 500 years ago, and the child is telling you what he's been given. You know, he's been given the knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's speaking through him. So what he's saying may be very true, but it's not the child has come back, and maybe some spirit entity is talking to that child and impressing you who are hearing him. So I know that there's, you know, there's a lot to be said on both sides,
sure.
But I do know that the phenomena itself is true. There's way too many people have been able to tell things that happened in the past, and they were exactly correct, and there's no way to have known.
Now, Jordan, do you believe that there are, well, we can call them then, since we were on the topic of games before, that these are two teams, in effect, a faction of two fighting with each other, potentially even over mankind, as being talked about in the Bible, demons and angels, or are they interchangeable, do you think?
No, I think that looking back on all of this over the years, and I've heard all the stories, I've sat with theologians and Jesuits and priests and rabbis and writers and authors and lecturers and teachers, and I've sat over the years and listened to all the stories. My hunch is that there is, without a doubt in my mind, there is some kind of a factions, different factions who are at war with each other. And the ones that we would say were good angels, not necessarily are they good. They're just not evil the way the evil ones are.
Right.
And so I know that there's something going on here that's transpiring on the earth. And it has to do with some kind of a spiritual matrix going on. There's some kind of a spiritual presence that is at war with something else in the spirit, other spirits. So there's, you know, that's why we have movies like Star Wars, Wars in the Heavens. And we're told about that, you know, that there are spiritual wars in the heavens. Well, I think that that's true. I think that there is some kind of a spiritual presence out there that's at war with some other kind of spiritual presence. And the way we explain it is that, well, it's the devil and his demons opposing God and the good angels. I don't care what you call it. All of that implies that it is not of this world, it's extraterrestrial, it's out there.
Yeah.
And yet it's some kind of a war. Well, now we're seeing all over the world, people are seeing every day extraterrestrial vehicles, UFOs. There's just too much of that going on now all over the earth. So we know that there's something going on out there in space. And yet it's very elusive. Well, nobody can put their finger on it, but everybody knows something's going on out there. Whoever they are, they're watching us and they're playing with us. And so I've had too many experiences not to know that there's something going on in the spirit world around us, because that would explain all of the profound demonic depravity and lunacy that we see in politicians, that we see in government.
Yeah.
You know, the murder, that senseless slaughter of children and innocent people. Whoever the spirit world is that's dominating our earth in a dark, evil presence, couldn't care less about we humans. We are just cannon fodder for them.
Jordan, what do you think the if we zoom out of that, because that's a very interesting idea, then we're in a realm of, you know, another thing, then basically we cannot solely blame human beings for all the ills in the world anymore. Sure, again, we're back to responsibility and the fact that we need to become smart to this and discover it, but okay, something else, another variable is in the picture now. What do you think is the deeper purpose for them in this case? Is it geopolitics? I mean, you mentioned the British-Israel Federation before. Does this have to do with something that we can see historically in the world, that we're being, you know, things are moving and happening in the world, and it seems to be almost outside of of a human individual. So it's going somewhere, basically. That's what I'm getting to.
That's exactly the way I wanted to say it. It's happening outside of our existence. There seems to be some kind of a all-encompassing, a word I choose as an overshadowing of the human race. There seems to be some kind of a superior, intellectually superior, overshadowing of the human family, the human race. And whoever and whatever it is, it's far superior to anything our minds can comprehend. That's why the ancient people called it God. I'm sure that that's what's happening to us, that we're being led and being manipulated by a higher intelligences, and that would explain how that would explain the stupidity and the profound dim-witted stupidity of the people, because there very well might be some kind of a legitimate, de jure, real, magical system that the higher powers in the universe are using against us, some kind of a higher technology that has to do with the electricity of our brain, how we communicate, how we can see visions. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised if there's some kind of a whole, for lack of a better term, military apparatus in the spirit world that is using the human race, causing us to kill each other, crimes, violence. People see on drugs, they see demons and see all kinds of hideous creatures when they're on certain, like some of those potions from South America and some of the things that people see. I think that they're actually seeing something that is there, but you don't normally see it. But take a particular drug and it opens up a portal where you can see a dark world that you didn't know existed.
Kind of a piercing through the veil in a way with the entheogenic substances, yeah.
That's exactly right, piercing through the veil. And so all of that implies that it's scary, because it means that we really don't have any control over them. They control us. Let me tell you something else that has been bothering me for a long time, and that is I have a couple of people, one in particular, who is able to tell me things which are going to happen to me 6 months to a year ahead of time, but it's in minute detail. They will give it to me in minute detail, tell me exactly what I'm going to be wearing, who I'm going to be with, what color the car will be, and then it will. And then they tell me, now here's what you're going to say. You're going to say this, and then the person on the passenger side is going to say this, and they go through this whole scenario in minute detail, and gives me the day and the hour, and the place and the point of it happening. And, 9 months to a year later, that's exactly on that day, on that hour, at that minute, that's exactly what I said is what he said I was going to say.
Hmm.
And the person next to me said exactly what he said they were going to say. Now, most people would say, how in the world could they do that? That's not my question. I couldn't care less how he does it. The thing that bothers me is that he can do it. That's what scares me, because my question is not how does he do it. My question is, what does that tell you about your life?
Yeah, that's right.
What does that tell you? If somebody can tell you in minute detail 9 months to a year ahead of time, and it happens exactly that way, what does that tell you? It tells you that your whole life is already known in the future, and that somebody is able to pierce the veil and see the future.
Jordan, I know that there's many depictions of these types of characters, but I want to mention one of the more recent one. It's a TV series going right now called Fringe, And in there, they have these administrating forces. They're called the observers, I think. And basically, they do the same thing. They map out and detail the whole experience of an event or one person's life in minute detail. They're kind of observing the timeline almost, and also manipulating and changing it. That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
But the implication is that if somebody can tell you a year ahead of time in minute detail, they are seeing your future, which means what? I mean, what are the implications of that? Well, from my understanding, it would appear that your whole life is already nailed down. It's already understood. It's already done. So therefore, the question is: well, then, what's that have to? What do you have to say about free will?
That's right. Yeah. Is there no free will?
Well, wouldn't seem that way. If somebody can tell you what's going to happen a year from now, and you do it just exactly the way they said you were going to do it, and the exact words that they said you were going to say, you said.
And even though you know it, you can't change it?
Nope.
That's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and and as I said again, what is the implications of that? Because I know it's happened to me more than one time, and the same person did it each time, and so I know it's possible to be done. And so that I don't know what that tells you about your life.
Well, I always wondered about that, Jordan, about free will and about how much is predetermined and whatnot. And I always wanted to be comfortably in the zone that we do make our own choices and things are not determined. But is this a psychic person or someone who has another kind of skill?
No, as a very psychic person, but very, very accurate every time. And... and I haven't talked to that person in a long time. I met them when I was supposed to, and I got from them whatever I was supposed to, and they're gone, and I'm gone. So, but I did learn, and I did have an experience that somebody does and able to see your future in minute detail. And
Do you think, Jordan, that this goes back to the demons and the angels we talked about before, that they are kind of...
Oh, I don't think so.
No? Okay.
No, and the reason why is because it implies something bigger than that. The implication is that it's far, far bigger than that. It doesn't seem that it would be a demon who would know or an angel who would know. No. It has to do with the whole superstructure of the universe and life itself. It's far bigger than that. You know, I don't know what other way to say it. It's far bigger than just a demon intervening and telling something or an angel. No. It has to do with who are you really? You know, and who are we as humans, and where do we come from? So when you discuss humans, there are three parts to us: mind, body, and spirit. While the mind, of course, is the brain. Well, your brain is no different, doesn't look any different, doesn't operate any different than any other brain on the earth. All humans that have brains, all the brains are the same. So therefore, your brain does not make you. The brain, it just operates the body. Well, then everybody has a body. And so your body is the same as everybody else's body. So therefore, there's nothing particular or peculiar about you and your body and your brain, because everybody else has a body and a brain. Well, then what makes you, you? Well, that's the third part of this equation, you know, mind, body, spirit. So then the question is, the real you is spiritual, but it's inhabiting a physical body for the moment. And, of course, the physical body couldn't operate if it didn't have some kind of a controlling mechanism. We call it the brain. So the brain is controlling the body so that you can operate And so the question now is, well, then who are you, your spiritual self? Who are you? And that would beg the question, where were you, your spiritual self? Where were you, not your body, not your brain, where were you 100,000 years ago? Where were you, say, 10,000 years ago? Where were you? Even on the other hand, where will you be, 100,000 years from today? I don't care about your body and your brain.
Sure.
Where will you be? And then that begs the question, well, what are we talking about? Who are you to start with? Where did you come from? So, I don't know. It's just a very interesting when you start breaking down the legitimacy of things which have happened. I've always been interested in the spiritual implications of things. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of important things that are going on this earth that involve the spirit world that we are just not aware of.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's one of the greatest mysteries of all time. I mean, the idea, and this, when we get into these areas, we supersede all the problems of the mundane everyday world as well, which is kind of a relief as well, but this idea, Jordan, that we come from somewhere, and where do we come from, and why are we here at a certain point, and then are we going to just leave and never come back in the shape we are, or does it all end after that point? It's interesting that we can come in and get fairly, detailed, if you will, in our comprehension and in our understanding about certain things, and to think that we're just going to leave again without carrying anything of that with us is kind of, that is very bizarre to me, if that's the case.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. How bizarre. That's incredible. why were you even here? Why did we do any of this? If it's just meaningless,
Yeah.
Your life is not meaningless. Your spirit is not meaningless. Well, then what is it? Who are we and why are we here? Where did we come from? And I've had way too many experiences of people telling me things. And so,
well, Jordan, what has this led you to believe? I mean, is this an experience machine? Are we here to advance in our spirit and to learn more, and we do this through reincarnation, or is it more sinister than that? What do you believe today?
I think it's more sinister than that. As I said to you before, I think that the idea of reincarnation, someone being able to tell you, or even as a small child, being able to tell you things which were absolutely flawlessly true, say 500 or 600 years ago, and then we find out that what they said was exactly correct. Well, how would they know? Where did that come from? Well, it implies that they were maybe alive 500 years ago and they're remembering it. Or that somebody else was alive and knew about it and were putting it into the child to say that. And so I've been in the company of world famous psychics. And one of the most famous world psychics, one of the most famous psychic people in the world was Kenny Kingston. He's still with us. He lives here in Los Angeles, but he was always known as a world famous psychic to the stars. And when he gave you a prophecy, I'm telling you, he was right on. He would be extraordinarily accurate on things he would tell you is going to happen to you 9 months from today or next 6 weeks from today. He'd give you a day and an hour and a time, and exactly what he said was going to happen did happen. He's not the one that I was talking about before, but he's another classic example. And I've sat and talked with him for hours, and some of his stories just blow my mind listening to him about how he can see the future. So,
what has he shared with you about that?
So for one thing, he was telling me that he said he was going to the airport and he had to catch a plane, And he went to that particular area where the people were going to be on that plane was sitting, waiting for that particular plane to board. And he said, when I walked up to that group that was sitting there, you know, for my particular flight, none of them had auras. Now, no one had an aura. And he said, I knew that if nobody sitting here has an aura, he can see auras. He said, I knew these people are dead. They have already died. And so he said, I went to the people at the desk and told them that I wanted to talk with an official from the airline quickly because something is terrible going to happen to these people. And they didn't know what he was talking about, and he said, so I told them, well, I'm not going on this plane. That's it. So I'll have to catch another one. And he said, I sat there, I watched all these people boarding the plane, and not one of them had an aura. And he said, and then I heard later that night when I got home, that plane crashed and everyone was killed.
Yeah.
He said, I knew it. They were already dead. They had no aura. Oh, how am I to explain that? I mean, how are you to understand that? I don't know. I don't know how to understand it. All I know is that I've seen him do it. I've seen him tell people things that are going to happen in the future. He's done it with me. It was about 8 months ahead of time. He told me exactly what's going to happen, and what the person is going to say to me, and et cetera, et cetera. And again, he's not the one I was talking to about originally.
Yep.
So I mean, I've had many experiences like that, and so it just boggles my mind, knowing that there's all kinds of strange, wonderful things that we just don't know. We're not being told.
Thank God for that, Jordan. That there are things to discover still and look into, and things that we don't know. I mean, I take comfort, if you will, in the mysteries that they're out there. You know, that there is a higher force and everything. You know.
Oh, of course they are. You know, as a matter of fact, did you ever hear the story about my girlfriend back in 1959 when I came to California and my girlfriend and her father? That's a whole story in itself. That's what got me started.
No, do you want to share it with us?
Well, do we have time?
Sure, we have time. No worries.
Well, when I first came to California, I've told this before, but I'll share it again. When I first came to California in 1959, I'm 19 years old, stupid kid, 19, and I ended up in Los Angeles. And I ended up in North Hollywood. And so I used to walk down, this is back in 59, we're talking, 53 years ago? And so I used to walk downtown, because I only lived about two blocks from town. And so on weekends, I walked downtown. Well, I went down one morning, on a Saturday morning, and went to a local restaurant, and the place was filled with people, but there was one chair open at the counter. So I sat at the counter, and then next to me was a girl about my age. She was about 17. I'm 19. So we got to talking, and come to find out, she only lived a couple blocks from me, and I only lived a couple blocks from town. She had walked downtown, so had I. So we started meeting in downtown on weekends. And so when we walk home, I would get home before she would because she lived two blocks further than me. And so one night she comes over to my place and she says, my father wants to see you. My dad wants to talk to you. And I didn't know what to think. I said, I'm not interested to talk to you then. And she said, my father's a very interesting man, and he wants to tell you something. He wants to talk to you. So I went with her. I don't know. I mean, it's just my girlfriend I meet downtown, but I don't know of anybody, her family. And so while walking up to the house with her, he happened by chance to be coming out the front door, and he saw us, and he motioned for us to come in. The moment I saw him, I got a reaction, an involuntary spiritual reaction. I felt something very strong about him, and the hair raised up on the back of my neck. I've never had that kind of feeling where it was involuntary. It just happened. And I looked at him, and he just motioned for us to come in. So I knew there was something strange about this man. But I felt more secure, you know, because of my girlfriend's father. So we went in, and her younger sister, about 11 years old, and the two girls, they sat on the floor, and the father sat on one end of the sofa, and I sat on the other. The mother was in the kitchen, and that night I never really saw her that night. But so we were talking, and he was asking me if I was working and how I liked my job, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just chit-chatting and talking. And all of a sudden, he said to me, he said, "Remember back in Florida when your dad built a new back porch? Your uncle helped him tear down and build a new back porch. And he used green lumber. It smelled funny, the lumber did, because it was green lumber. And that scared me. And I didn't want to show tears in front of my girlfriend, but he frightened me." And he looked at me, and just very nonchalant, he said, "Well, do you remember that?" And I said, "Yes, I remember that." And he says, "I remember one night you were supposed to be sleeping, and you got up, and you were about 8 years old. And you got up, and you went out in the back porch. And you sat on that new back porch, and it smelled funny because the lumber was green, and you picked some of the lumber, you picked some of the wood with your fingers. Remember how you peeled some of the wood and were smelling it? And you were looking at the moon? Do you remember doing that?" And I just looked at him, because he was exactly right. And he said to me, "You talked to God that night, didn't you?" And I just shook my head, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Now, what did you say to God?" And I didn't answer him. I just looked at him. He said, "I'll tell you what you said. You said you wanted to do something important with your life, that you wanted your life to have a meaning and you wanted to do something important with your life. Is that what you said?" And I looked at him and shook my head, "Yes, that's what I said." And then he said to me, "Well, how in the world would I know that? How would I know that?" And I told him, I said, "I don't know how you know that." And he said, "Well, was I right?" I said, "Yes, you're right." "Well, how would I know that?" And I said, "I don't know how." And he said, "Well, I know because we were there. We were right there, but you just didn't see us, did you?" And I said, "I didn't see anyone." He said, "That's right, but we were there. And if not, how would I know what happened if I wasn't there?" And he said, "You've always been interested in secrets and UFOs and aliens and all that kind of thing, haven't you?" And I said, "Yes, all my life." And he said, "Yep, I know." And he said, "Would you like to see some UFOs up close tonight?" And I said, "Yes, I would." And he said, "Well, come with me. I can do that for you." And so I got up and walked outside North Hollywood, northern suburb of Los Angeles, 1959. And my girlfriend and her sister and myself and him, the four of us walked out in the front yard about midnight. And he looks up into the sky and starts inaudibly talking. His mouth is moving, he's talking, but you can't hear him. And then he turns to me and he said, "They said they'll be here in about 3 minutes. They're coming, they'll be here in just a couple of minutes." And I said, "Who?" He says, "To us." He said, "You said you wanted to see UFOs tonight, didn't you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, then wait. They'll be here. They're coming right now in a couple of minutes." And they did. About 2 or 3 minutes later, three beautiful, gorgeous, beautiful disc-shaped craft came from over the horizon south going north. As it passed over us, it stopped, and there were three of them in a triangle formation, and each one of them were identical, about the same size as the moon, the full moon in the sky, so it wasn't just a light, it was full moon size, three of them, in a triangle formation, and they were, looks like a pie cut in 6 or 8 slices, and each slice was a different color. And it was circulating those colors, and they were very, very vivid colors. And it was absolutely beautiful with no sound whatsoever. And we stood there looking at them, the two girls, myself and the father. And then after a few moments, he started inaudibly talking to them again. And he said, they said they're going now. They're leaving. They're going north, and they're leaving now, but they will see you later. And they did. They started to move. And I watched them as they went into the north, and they were gone. And I said, my God, that was beautiful. I said, well, what was this I saw? And he said, that's us. We've been here for a long time. He says, so you asked God to let you do something, so we're going to let you do something. We have something for you to do, but it won't come to the very last part of your life. We have something for you to do, but it won't come to the last part of your life.
Hmm.
And I said, what? And he says, that's not important right now. Just go on out and live your life. We will see to it. You learn what you're supposed to. You will meet who you're supposed to. And when it's time for you to do what we brought you here to do, and I said, what do you mean brought me here? And he said, well, why are you in California? Why did you come to Los Angeles? I said, I don't know. I just had to do it. He said, that's right. We brought you here. So he said, so when it comes time for you to do what you're supposed to do, you know what it is. But that won't come for a long time. This will be something at the very last part of your life. We have something for you to do. And that was it. So then he told me, he said, I'm going to start you on your journey tonight. So I'm going to give you a book. I want you to have this book, and it will start you on your journey. And he gave me a book, which you can still get today, and any good bookstore still has copies of it today. It's called The Complete Works of Charles Fort.
Right, yep.
And it's an incredible book, and that's what he gave me. And he said, just go home and study this, just read it, and when it's time for you to do what we brought you here to do, you'll know what it is, so don't worry about it. Well, after that, that was in early 1959, after that, I started having all kinds of otherworld, experiences. I mean, peak experiences, strange stuff, meeting strange people, seeing things, experiencing things. So there's no doubt in my mind that there's something going on here and that I was in the presence of some sort of a higher intelligence, though at the time it was just my girlfriend's father. But there's no doubt in my mind that he was not just an ordinary man. And that was not just by chance happening. I was supposed to meet him. No doubt in my mind about it.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that's just one experience.
Did you ever have contact with him again? No.
I went for about a month and a half, 2 months. I would go over there on weekends. Sometimes I'd go over at night for a little while. And then I'd go on weekends, and sometimes whole family, the mother included, we would take off and we would go about 50 miles north of Los Angeles. And that's back in 59, a long time ago. We'd go out to the desert. And he would, we'd go out to the desert, and he would tell me all about the different alien life forms who were here, the different ones who have come here. And some of them are enemies with each other. And he would tell me about the different alien groups that are here. And I was just a kid, 19-year-old kid, but I was fascinated with this man who knew so much and who could look up into the sky and call for UFOs and they show up.
Quite a gift.
About me, you know.
Yeah. Wow. So who was this guy? Do you think, in hindsight?
Well, I was going to say, one morning I went over there on a Saturday morning to see them, and they were gone. The house is wide open. All the doors are wide open, and they moved, and I never saw them again, ever.
Huh.
My girlfriend didn't tell me she was leaving. Nobody said anything. They were just gone forever. So,
How much time did you have to, I guess, pick his brain? I mean, at that stage, you must, first of all, have been scared of the guy, right? Freaked out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was absolutely fascinated with his with him. I was fascinated with him because there was an other world presence around him. I mean, it was like I'm not in the same. You're not talking to a human being. You're talking to an entity. That's what my gut feeling was as a 19-year-old kid. That was my perception of when I was talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking to a normal man like yourself. You're talking to someone who is not of this world. They're not of this world. They are here. They look like you. They look normal, but they're not normal.
Have you ever met anyone that you think is, I guess, of the being as similar or of the same race of entities?
You know what? I haven't met anyone that has had an impact so immediate and so profound an impact on me as he did. No. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if I've been in the company of aliens. Other world entities who look like us, because I've heard so many times from military people I know, scientists and physicists I know who talk about the some of the races that look like humans. They look like us. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. It didn't shock me, because he looked very human, but I know he wasn't. No doubt in my mind that he was not of this world. And So, like I said, I've heard so many stories and had too many experiences not to know that the world is not what you think it is.
So he or they, obviously, I made sure you were off to a good start here in your early years in the beginning. But this thing he mentioned at the end of your life, have you thought more about what that could be?
Yeah, I have. And he said, when I asked him what was this I'm doing, and he said, you will know when it comes time. You will know. Well, my gut feeling is that it has been, it has been what I'm doing. I was supposed to start some kind of a movement on the earth that caused people to begin to look at the dark side of life. To cause people to begin to realize that something is going on in the dark that you don't know. Some kind of a secret societies, occultism, mysticism. There's a whole world of darkness that's operating right here in front of you and you don't see it. So I kind of feel that that's been my work to do, is to make people aware. And I'm just amazed at how much my work has, impacted, because I don't own anything. I live in one room by myself with nothing. I have no bank account, no checking account, no credit cards, nothing. I don't own anything, have no family, got nothing, have nothing, and ask for nothing. But my work has impacted, and I see it. I mean,
it does.
The web all the time, and I see all over the world, from China and Africa and Asia and all over the world. I've seen people talking about the subjects that I've been talking about for 50 years. Now it's everywhere. I mean, the National Treasure and Da Vinci Code.
Look at all the movies out there today and the television series. They're all steeped in this stuff now, aren't they?
All of it, everywhere, and I'm just amazed that the whole world has become enmeshed in this kind of occult sciences and the symbols on the back of the dollar bill and all that kind of thing, and so maybe that's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah,
was to cause a renaissance for people to awaken to the dark side, to know that there is something else going on here that you have not been told, and it's all part of some kind of a well-laid, powerful presence that's manipulating the whole human race.
Does this, to you, Jordan, puts a different spin on human history, even technological progress. I mean, some people have suggested, again, we can go back to your ideas of these entities, these demons and angels and so forth, that one theory states that they're here basically stranded and therefore have tried to attain a certain level technologically to be able to kind of take off. Another is what you suggested before, that they are here basically because we're the farm, that they are, you know, they're farming us basically, either if that's for the negative energy or whatnot. But what's your take? What's the reason?
You know, I was in business with Zachariah Sitchin. I got some of his books published, but I also sent him around the world. I mean, I was going to do a 13-week miniseries with Zachariah Sitchin and got him to sign a contract to work with me. So I was in business with Zachariah Sitchin, and I was going to send him to seven countries. We actually only got him to five countries, and the deal fell through. But I had many, many opportunities to sit and talk with Zachariah Sitchin because I was in business with him.
Mm-hmm.
And up in Portland, Oregon, I got him speaking engagements. A lot of his radio shows and speaking engagements Zachariah did, I got for him. And there was a time when I was very close to him. And so I've asked, and I've talked to him in private. He's told me things in private that would blow your mind about Zachariah that nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that somebody has created us. I think we are the test tube creation of some higher intelligence. Well, obviously, Christians will tell you, well, it's God created us. Well, God is simply dog spelled backwards. So when you're talking to me about God, I would suggest you go out to the desert late at night, look into the universe, and try and understand with your finite mind how big the universe really is. And that the starry heaven that we're seeing, most of it is just our own galaxy. And you know, and we're out in the outskirts of one galaxy. And going at the speed of light, which the light will go around the Earth 8.5 times in 1 second. That's how fast light travels. Light goes around the Earth. If you shine a light and it went around the Earth and came back to you, it would go around the Earth 8.5 times in 1 second. That's fast.
Very fast.
If you travel at the speed of light across just from our galaxy, the Milky Way, and start on one corner, one edge of the galaxy, and go across, I don't know, I've heard 130,000 light years, 100,000 light years going around the Earth 8.5 times in a second. Traveling at that speed will only take you 100,000 years to go across our galaxy. And there's billions, if not trillions, of galaxies. And so if you want to talk to me about God, you better go back and do your homework. There's a bigger universe out there than you even begin to suspect how big it is. So I'm kind of leaning toward thinking that we humans were planted here or created by a higher intelligence. And that's what the Bible actually says. I remember a dear rabbi friend of mine who became a very important rabbi in Israel. He left and went to Israel and ended up on the Knesset. But he and I used to talk about this stuff many years ago. And it was he that told me once back in the 60s, he said to me, nowhere in the Bible does the scriptures say, especially in the Old Testament, that God created man. It doesn't say that. Go back and read it. There's no place in the Bible that God created man. That's in the religions, but it doesn't say that in the Bible. And that's a whole subject when you get into what the Bible actually says, that the rabbis know that they haven't told you. And that's a whole subject I love, because that's my favorite subject, is theology and the occult sciences of theology. So
How is that, Jordan, by the way? It's always interesting to me that dichotomy. We've talked about that with other guests as well, but there seems to be that there's so much backwardness in religion and the message that come from there, and yet at the same time people are mesmerized, if you will, by the Bible and what it contains. People have analyzed it from different points of view, the astrotheology contained within there, the message. I want to ask you this, what's your take on this? How can something be so full of magnificent things and yet at the same time then kind of lay the fruits of so much mayhem that we've seen in the world?
Well, I think the mayhem comes from the organizations, corporations, and mankind. I don't think it's the book that's evil. I think it's the people are evil. And I think it's in the nature of humans it's in our nature. Because that's a whole subject we could get into. But I totally understand the idea that there's two parts to us. There is an animalistic part and there's a spiritual part. And the Apostle Paul said that in the scriptures, in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul said that we have a war in our flesh, not with flesh and blood, but we have a war inside of us, a war between the good and the evil that's inside of us. So there's two of us. There's an evil, a regular, normal, animalistic self, and then there's the spiritual self. And so there's a war going on in every human being between the normal, base, animalistic, and the spiritual presence. And so that's a big subject, I'm sure we don't have time to get into that. But the bottom line is that the Bible does not say God created man. The Bible actually says, well, first of all, in the Bible, in the book of Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But that's not what it says. In fact, if you go back to the original language and read it, it doesn't say that. That's the King James Version. That's the authorized version. But that's not the original version. So in the original Hebrew, it says, in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. Well, in Hebrew, El is God. But Elohim is not God. Elohim is a different word. And so the King James people said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's not what it says. Go back and read it correctly. In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. And Elohim is a plural for the word El. El is God. Elohim is God in the plural, more than one. So the correct reading of Genesis 1:1 would be correctly in the Hebrew, in the beginning the gods created the heavens and the earth. Elohim, not El. And then the word for man, the word for man in Hebrew is ish, ishi, or ish, ish. Ish is man in Hebrew. But when it says, and God created Adam and Eve, it does not say in Hebrew, man, and God created ish. No, it doesn't say that. So God did not create ish, because ish is man. Well, God didn't create man. So, and what it actually says in Hebrew is that God created Adam. It's the word in Hebrew, Adam, not Adam, A-D-A-M, no, Adam. And so God created Adam and blew into his nostrils, and man, and Adam became a living soul. This thing is pregnant with all kinds of profoundly interesting implications. And I've sat with rabbis and talked about this stuff for hours. I mean, we could do another program one day on just the creation of the human creatures and who we are, where we've come from, according to the Bible. That Christians and Jews, especially Christians, have never heard. Many Jews know about it, but basically no Christians have ever heard this story.
And it goes to the heart, Jordan, of one of the problems we discussed before, which is, of course, where we come from and who is, if anybody has made us. And what, I guess, why do you favor that story over, let's say, others? Why should we believe that story, do you think?
Well, I'm just saying that I think that there's so much of that original story is bared out in the work of Zachariah Sitchin, in the work, especially in the work of Lloyd Pye,
right,
and other people who have been doing some fantastic and incredibly good research into the human creature, where we come from, how we are designed. Lloyd Pye comes to my mind immediately because he is absolutely sensational. I love listening to him.
I agree. Yeah.
And but he's not the only one, but he's very good. And so listening to all of these teachers and speakers and authors and writers over the years, I've come to understand the basic concepts of these people and of the records, and especially the book called Lee and Vivian Gladden, the Gladdens, the man and wife team, Lee and Vivian Gladden. They wrote a book called, many years ago, called Heirs of the Gods, and their work was absolutely extraordinarily brilliant stuff. And then, of course, the book called The Greatest Story Ever Told, with Lana Cantrell. Lana Cantrell, many years ago, wrote a thick, heavy book called The Greatest Story Never Told. The Greatest Story Never Told. And it was the same kind of information that Zachariah Sitchin was talking about and so many others. She was talking about it many years before, about how we were created, by who, and how they did it. She was explaining all the intricacies of how the human being was designed. And so, over the years, I've seen so many, read so many books, and heard all these speakers. It all begins to make sense to me now at 72. I've heard all the stories. I've heard all the speakers. I've talked to the rabbis and to all the clergy, and it all begins to make sense to me now. It's a very big story, and I can't do justice to it right now because, you know, I have to start all over again and go back to Genesis 1, and that would take a couple of hours just to go through why I believe that there is something very legitimate in Genesis, but it's not what you think. It's not what you've been told. I think a whole story there that's encoded that we've never been told. Because I don't believe for a minute that there was a Moses. I don't believe Jesus ever existed. I don't think that there was ever an Abraham at all. There was no Abraham, never existed. So therefore, the three people of the book who based their religion on Abraham, all three, you know, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, say that they all agree that Abraham was their father. I'm saying there was no Abraham, never existed. There was no such man as Abraham. I'm also saying that there was no Jesus. There was no man called Jesus. That's my opinion. But it's based on 50 years of looking at theology and religion and hearing all the experts from around the world. After 50 years, I am of the opinion that there's a bigger story here yet. And that the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam don't have it yet. There's something very, very big going on here, and that we are being led down the garden path because we're ill-informed, unread, and we're bigoted and closed-minded. But when you start looking at stuff and do it for about 50 years, you begin to get an impression that there's something bigger going on here. And
oh, yes.
So, you know, I could talk for hours on that subject.
Well, it is a fascinating story. You have a lot of, you know, detail. Of course, there's a lot of YouTube videos with you, and you're continuously talking about these and giving it out and to people. And I just want to say on a personal note before we begin to wrap up here that I obviously appreciate your time today, Jordan. It's been a lovely conversation. And again, want to thank you for opening up the year of 2013 with us. And I do hope you hold on to the sense of magic and focus on the good things in your life, and that you will continue for a long time to do what you do, Jordan, because you do it so well. And so before we wrap things up, why don't we give out your details again? Obviously, your new website, and then if you want to give out your contact details again, Jordan, that's up to you.
Yeah, I would say my contact is even more important than the website. My website is simply Jordan Maxwell Show, SHOW, because I put that up there for a radio show that I'm kind of planning on doing, but nothing's happening with it yet. And if I ever do actually get my show going, at least I'll have a website for it, and it's called Jordan Maxwell Show. But I would suggest, if you want to contact me, go to my email is jordanmaxwell@gmail.com. But the Jordan has no A. So it's Jordan Maxwell@gmail.com. So do email me, and I will try to get back to you.
All right, very good. And jordanmaxwellshow.com is the temp website for now. Thank you again for your time, Jordan. I really appreciate it. And take good care of yourself. And I hope we can do this again soon, Jordan.
I'm sure we can, anytime. Thank you for having me on. Good night.
All right, thank you for listening to our premiere program for 2013, and we want to extend our special thanks to all members, and also take the opportunity to say that we have a lot of interesting programs in the pipeline for you this year. We have new projects, new TV episodes, continued presentation of material and research as we continue to provide answers and seek for the authentic. So thank you for staying with us. We'll return with more in just a few days. Next up is Olle Damegård from Sweden to talk about his book Coup d'etat in slow motion, about the murder of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, the very strange and two-faced character that have been both loved and hated on the international stage. It's a story that connects with so many other international controversies and conspiracies. It basically is the Swedish JFK, if you will, many comparisons between these two cases. But that's next, and after this, we are going to talk with Byron Belitzos about the Urantia book, Jeremy, the alien scientist, Mark Safer on Tesla, and many more. Take good care of yourself, and we'll return with more soon. Bye-bye.